The tell point was when we saw in our loyalty data, we see almost in real time what the activity is of those people. Yes, they were our most loyal guests, but if their behavior was changing in an identifiable way, that for us was a leading indicator of what was going to happen with the general consumer. I do feel really confident that AI applied to it can do a better job.
Without a doubt. Welcome to another episode of Tech Bytes. We have had this guest on the pod previously. He's grown a brand from 65 units all the way up to 1,200 units nationally. On the previous episode, he was kind enough to run us through the history. What are the things that you should be looking for to franchise your restaurant to try to grow it? This time around, we're going to touch base on technology. Don Fox, thanks for being on the podcast again. You have a unique perspective. You started in the early 2000s. Technology didn't really exist. And then technology changed everything. So this is a fitting conversation to have. So to start off, I want to start with this basic core question. What is the role of technology within the restaurant? What is the objective?
Yeah, I think that the number one thing that tech has to do is in some way enhance the guest experience. That's the top priority. If it does, and arguably is always going to lead to some increase in visitation, increasing satisfaction, and hence increasing the top line, then you can start to pencil it out, the wisdom of it, decide whether it's going to be a good investment for you. And that's not to say that that's the only role for technology, but that is the most important one. Because as all other technologies get looked at, any operator at any level in the organization, whether it's the franchisee investing in it on their end or back at the franchisor level trying to decide if technology is going to be good for the business, they always, at some point, it gets put under the pencil, and so that sales contribution factor is just fundamentally important. Now, there's other roles, because certainly you can layer in technology that's going to help productivity, still again deliver dollars, but here's where there sometimes is such a double-edged sword that you'll look at a proposal for technology that is in some way expected to improve productivity, but is not complementary to the guest experience. And then you've got competing interests, and sometimes the math doesn't start to work. And I think that's still one of the biggest opportunities between tech providers, let's say, and their potential customers, is really doing a very objective analysis on how an investment in tech is going to pay out, because perhaps they're not looking at it holistically enough.
Very interesting, because I agree 1,000%. If it doesn't improve guest experience, which in a restaurant, it's hospitality, so then you're not even on the right page. And that improving customer experience will definitely have an impact, as you said, on the top line revenue. And I always say that in business, money solves all problems. So if you can, and then the way to make more money is to get the customer to come back in. There's this scary metric within the restaurant industry that 70, so we did a ton of research. Why do restaurants say they have thin margins? Why do they always complain of high food costs? Why are they always complaining of labor challenges, that it's hard to find labor? And it all stems from one thing: lack of top line revenue. They're not earning enough revenue to pay their staff a living wage. They're not earning enough top line revenue to be able to absorb a 3-5% food cost increase to still remain profitable. And they're just not earning top line enough to drive more to the bottom line. And all three of those can be solved using top line revenue. And the way you drive top line revenue, as you mentioned, is to get more customers in the door, which touches back on that customer experience. So interesting to to hear that and have that come from you that, hey, if it doesn't solve customer experience, if it doesn't drive top line revenue, it's probably not a good investment overall.
Yeah, and boy, this has changed so much, and of course, it's changing it at an accelerated pace. In the last couple of years, actually now, actually more than that, at least 4 or 5, the role of third-party delivery services, for example, and the technology, I mean, that's a technology-enabled service channel. And it's become very clear that, that is enhancing the experience in terms of providing a convenience. That's a demand for that's clearly there. That marketplace has surprised me. I had just recently come back from a National Restaurant Association board meeting, and we were looking at national numbers. And the share of business for third-party delivery is, even in the current economic environment, is not at all eroding. It defies conventional wisdom a little bit when you think about price sensitivity and what's going on with affordability, and I would have expected to see that number start to get chipped away at, but it hasn't. So it just reinforces that there's a need to be there in that space to embrace that technology, or you're leaving a lot on the table. Now, maybe some operators and some type of restaurant concepts can't afford to do that, and that's okay. It's just not part of their business model. But I would dare say, when you look at the size of the market that's out there right now in delivery, most restaurant operators cannot afford to be without that channel. They have to do particular things. And again, this is where technology can help maybe take some approaches to it to make it work for them within their particular brand. But I think it's difficult for anybody to just say, no, I'm not gonna play in that space. And think about how technology has advanced, even in that space. I mean, I think back to the early days, the old cliche about the sea of iPads,
Oh, yeah.
tablets on the counter. Well, my goodness, thank goodness we got out of that because of the help of technology providers. To be able to consolidate it, get everything integrated with the POS, it's made life incredibly easier. Now, a caveat to all that is that when you look at your business holistically, a challenge still, I would say, to this day for the industry is the potential disruption that takes place between third party and traditional ordering customers in the restaurant. One of the grievances that you still hear customers express, and this isn't about Firehouse, this is, I'm speaking about generally, is when they go into a restaurant, they're looking to get traditional service and they can't get it because everybody's busy tending to the off-premises orders, and it's something that seems very obvious and apparent to the guest standing there waiting for somebody to just take their order or fulfill their order once they've already placed it. So there are still these friction points within restaurants that really technology needs to be a solution for. I think there's still a lot of work to be made there. But I'll back up to a fundamental point I want to make was even as additive as third-party delivery is, and even though the tech for managing third-party delivery has gotten better, the tech is still creating some friction holistically with the business because of our limited ability to seamlessly integrate all the channels of trade that are being dealt with in the restaurant.
Yeah, and restaurant space is very challenging. Well, not I guess any business nowadays, because in order to run and operate a restaurant, you'll need internet and connectivity. You'll need one technology provider to do that. Then you've got POS, online ordering, gift cards, loyalty, website, third party, employee scheduling, and I could go on and on and on and on. So if you've got six different vendors trying to do that, it's just unmanageable, and it's very difficult to try to get all of these people on the same page. They have their priorities. You want you to be the top priority, which is very difficult. So,
Integration is the most, well, it's the dirtiest word in the industry at the C-suite, I think. The need for integration is obvious. The capacity or ability to pull it off, in my experience, has been extraordinarily difficult.
Yeah, there's been a lot of limiting factors there. A lot of parties, like POS companies, just absolutely never wanted. I know that's why we started, because we couldn't get the POS companies to give us access. If they would have given me access, I would have been this one little guy who had one product, who just kind of got buried in this ocean that nobody would have found out about. However, the inability and their rigid approach to, no, we're not going to give you access because XYZ, just kind of absolutely is forcing and driving people to come up with these all-in-one solutions and better approaches where you don't have to rely on those guys. And now if you're rebuilding and if you're building from zero, then you're going to build 10 times, 100 times better than a system that was designed by, you know, some guy 30 years ago, and it's still running that Aloha system in a restaurant. It just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, it's a real challenge. You know, if I put on my futurist hat, I can envision a day where AI is applied in a way that a lot of the decision making that happens in a restaurant is taken over. I mean, if you have the processing power, if you've got the AI capacity to do it. I mean, think about this, and this may sound like I'm aging myself with the George Jetson reference, but think about a universe where you've got your staff even wired in to where AI is assessing every input, every order that's coming in. Let's say has facial recognition, not to recognize individuals, but to know that certain number of people have walked into a restaurant. And all of these inputs are coming in, and in real time, directing the mechanics of the business, things that right now managers on the floor have to sometimes don't always do a good job. I mean, think about how much training it takes to get an excellent manager on the floor and directing the team. Now, maybe that day will never come, but if you go to the nth degree of what could be possible in real time, it could be that. Now, that doesn't mean you eliminate managers, because think about the things that are most critical to the success of a restaurant. Very often, it's the hospitality, it's the human touch. But what if now you take that person who's right now in that restaurant management role, and what they are primarily skilled at is all the soft skills, because AI isn't going to manage the soft skills of your team, I would say. Yeah, they are not going to manage the soft skills of really genuinely dealing with guests. And those are the things that a lot of customers don't want to lose. But my gosh, if I was able to take a professional manager and be able to limit their focus on I'll just call it the people part of the business. My gosh, what an impact they could have on it. But what happens in a lot of restaurants now with the manager? They're absorbed in a lot of the administrative duties and the technical things of a restaurant out of necessity. They have to. But it often comes at the expense of what's happening with the customer or even with the employees. So there could be, in the years ahead for us, a much different universe of how a restaurant operates, tapping theoretically into the full capacity of AI. But that will be made more difficult, I would think, if we don't, or let's say the providers, the service providers to the industry, don't do a better job of sharing.
Agreed.
It's a tough thing because they're worried about their pedestrian interests, the things that are unique to their brand, and they guard everything. I get it. But in the end, what are we losing?
Sure.
What business opportunity is being lost? It's especially again with the rate of change today. So I just think it's going to take some more progressive thinking. Folks like yourself that are out there and kind of get it. So we need an Elon Musk sort of equivalent in technology being applied to the restaurant space?
Yeah. I single-handedly, I've said this publicly and I'll continue to sing this song until I can no longer sing it, but I think the reason that restaurant industry as a whole has been held back can be truly attributed to Aloha. Because if they had allowed others to innovate on top of their platform, not only would they still have some interest in the game and they actually people would still subscribe to them, but they could have just absolutely crushed it internally and eliminated a ton of competition by not forcing people to go start POS companies in order to solve that problem.
Yeah, and using them as an example. So let's say they had done that, and now they had this ecosystem where everything was already integrated. So if you were a futurist, and now you're trying to use AI, which has to harness all this, because for the type of futuristic thing I'm talking about, you need the nth degree of detail in terms of what's happening in the business. It has all the data, again, that's coming in real time to be able to do it. And if you're trying to cobble that together, even to get to something that you beta, you know, that you try to get out there and design, nothing's insurmountable, but I would say it gets close to it to have to harness all the inputs, because you're talking about not just hundreds, you may be talking about thousands of data points that have got to come in to get a truly smart AI-driven managed restaurant.
Yeah, and I think restaurants are so far behind it. I highly doubt in the restaurant industry AI is going to have any amount of impact. However, I always say that if a human can do it, a computer can do it 100 times better, 100 times more efficient, and 100 times cheaper. So there's definitely a lot of room for growth once this data set is actually maintained and organized.
And by the way, and I think within the restaurant industry, and having been in it for 50 years and knowing how every part of it works in the analog sense, when I do feel really confident that AI applied to it can do a better job.
Without a doubt.
Of the decision-making process on all the intricate things that happen. Again, it's going to take a brilliant person, brilliant programming, to be able to make it happen. But yeah, it would in the end be able to do it. And especially if you think about for any brand. I mean, think about the power that think about from a franchisor perspective. If you're trying to scale a brand and you've got that better mousetrap through AI on how to actually run a restaurant, and now you've got a prospective investor, a franchisee, and they know that now the success of that restaurant operating isn't as dependent upon the immense amount of training for a manager on all the intricacies of how to manage a floor, manage the business. But no, rather, I'm licensing your proprietary AI model for my restaurant. Because remember, this model, it's going to have to be different for every brand, because the inputs are different for every brand. There's maybe 90% of it is common framework across all types of restaurants. But the secret sauce is going to be in the 10%.
Sure.
Otherwise, it doesn't deliver results.
I want to touch base on a couple of things. The 3PD conversation that you had. My take is, if your brand isn't successful without 3PD, you can't blame them for, oh, they're taking 30% revenue cut, da 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 da. I think it goes back to the restaurateur. Like, they're driving revenue to you. You need to take that revenue. If you're successful without them, you're gonna be very successful with them. And by the way, like Wade Allen and Pankaj Patra, they're both on our board of advisors. They built an entire, I believe it was like $170 million a year business strictly on DoorDash. So you can't tell me that it doesn't work. It does work. You just got to know how to do that.
Absolutely.
And then you're just paying them a fair share of them doing all the work for you. They're getting, they're doing the marketing, they're doing the delivery, they're doing all of that work for you and allowing you to focus on what you're good at. So take advantage of the opportunity. You cannot afford not to be on third-party platforms because it's 30%.
Yeah, you just have to get the pricing right. And by the way, maybe some people have studied this in detail, but the third-party delivery customer does not live in a vacuum generally. Maybe some only enjoy a given brand on third party, but I would say it's more likely than not that the majority experience multiple channels with your with your brand. And the additive factor of third party, which can be a trial point for a brand. You know, again, if you're not in it, you're not going to get You've lost
revenue
that potential
is zero.
For trial.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. And nobody's going to try you again in the future. And by the way, regardless, there are, I actually, in fact, I had this conversation with someone just like this week. And I said, what's the alternative? Do you want some revenue or do you want no revenue? I'd rather have a small part of something than have nothing. Absolutely. Like, it just does not make sense. But
yeah, because I think what it's fair to say over time is there was more and more data to look at. You know, it wasn't cannibalized. The third party wasn't cannibalizing the rest of the business in any sort of meaningful way. It's a unique channel of trade. The person generally who's using it is in a particular need state. And if you're not on, so if you in at that moment in time when they're in that need state of having to have delivery, if you're not on the platform, it's quite simple. You don't get the business. Somebody who's in a need state to get food delivered is, I would say it's not going to be very common that they're going to go and they're going to look and they're, you know, if I've got restaurant X and I'm not on the platform and they go to the platform maybe hoping to find restaurant X on there for delivery, but they see that I'm not on there, they're not going to, their need state hasn't changed. They're not going to jump in the car and run down to restaurant X. No, they're going to order somewhere to get their food delivered as long as that was the need state. And I know we're beating the same ground here, but it is amazing to me still, like it sounds like to you, when operators think that, again, it's going to cannibalize their business, or, you know, that it's a loser for them. Yeah, if they believe they're losing money, they just need to sharpen their pencil.
Yeah, and by the way, like, again, it's back to the same point. Like, it's chances are they're not going to find you, and they're not going to order from you if you're not on the platform. It's zero, and you can't underestimate the power of convenience. Back to the need. You've got a guest that has a need that can't drive or can't do anything. You don't offer delivery or whatever the case may be, and they're looking in that third platform. They're ordering it. They're willing to pay more. There's a reason you go to a gas station, you buy a bottle of water, you buy Fiji for $3. You go into a restaurant, you pay $6. You go into an airport, you pay $9.
Yeah, well,
like, same bottle.
And another example, and it's, I guess you could say in some respects, it's a form of technology. Just look at the difference between having a drive-through and not having a drive-through.
100% agreed.
Because people, when they're choosing to go drive-through, they're in a particular need state, and they go in. And the evidence is quite simple. Just take any brand, I would venture to say, that has both drive-through and non-drive-through restaurants, and the drive-through restaurants are going to outperform to a substantive degree the non-drive-through restaurants, because the others don't enjoy the benefit of that technology, and i.e. the channel of trade. So yeah, pretty basic stuff, but sometimes not understood well enough.
If you're listening to this and you're not on third-party platform, stop, go subscribe, Uber Eats, DoorDash first, and then get on Grubhub. And actually, I was talking to somebody that they're doing $275,000 a month in third-party orders, but they're only doing 150 in store. 150 in store, 275 on third parties per month. That is insane. That, imagine if he was not on that platform, like the amount of revenue he would lose. It's just mind-boggling. But let's get off that train. Let's get on to the next one. all-in-one or best-in-breed technology?
Well,
let's open that can of worms.
Yeah, well, if the all-in-one fits my needs, terrific. Yep, but it's hard to say that animal exists out there. So, but this, of course, harkens back to the integration discussion that we just had, because when you're, you know, going best in breed for various services, yeah, there's almost so much of technology has to tie together. I know we're going full circle here. Where does it tie back to? It always ties back to the POS.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah.
That's the brain, and it's all got to go back there. And then particularly when you start thinking about franchise systems, because then you get sales reporting issues and maintaining the integrity of the data and the sales reporting. Independence might be in a little bit different position where they can cherry pick, because the need for integration isn't quite the same. But when you start, when you're a multi-unit operator, forget about even franchisee versus and franchisors, just when you're a multi-unit, you know, that you've got a different set of needs that technology has to provide. If you've got just all this siloed information and siloed units and no way to consolidate and roll that up, it makes your life extraordinarily difficult. So, yeah, maybe best in breed for the single unit person out there. By the way, that doesn't mean small unit. I could have a very high volume independent restaurant, and best in breed may be a real good solution for me. But as soon as people go multi-unit, franchise systems, ideally you would like to have the preferred would be an all-in-one. But again, that, I don't know, where is that unicorn?
Well, hopefully it's coming soon. So that's what we're working on.
Yes, but good.
I think the way to go, like, I've, by the way, like, yes, you know, you may be a restaurateur, but at the end of the day, I'm an entrepreneur, so are you. We're both in the same boat. We're both running a business, and running a restaurant is running a business. And I've had to deal with this. Back in the day when I started my telecom, a couple of years into it, it was growing so rapidly that I just couldn't sustain it anymore. I couldn't say, oh, for accounting, go here. For support tickets, go over there. For project management, go over there. For billing, go over here. It was just a nightmare. So I lived through that, and I decided, okay, enough is enough. I'm gonna go buy an all-in-one. Didn't exist. I built it. And today it is the backbone of our company. Will it do everything perfectly? No. But the 80% that we're spending every day, all that is done perfectly. And the other 20%, yeah, who cares? It's not that big of a pain to solve. But I've started to kind of adapt my ideology. It's like, hey, you got to go all in one because I've seen the impact of it in my business. It has helped me grow. But you could start with all in one. And then as you continue to grow, now my new motto is start with all in one and then start kind of adding the best in breed as those needs arise. But initially up front, it's just so much work and so difficult to go out there, spend premium, get the best in breed, and only use 20% of its functionality. It just makes no sense from my point of view, from my running three different companies.
Yep.
Perfect. Yep. Anything else to add there? Sounds like maybe you...
Well, like I said, if the holy grail is getting that all-in-one provider, I'll say that. You know, one
Stay
relationship to
that.
Manage. Yes.
yeah, there you go. All right, so let's come. We've had this conversation actually at FS Tech. We hosted an innovation forum, which we talked about this topic. But how did you deal with resistance internally and externally? Internally at a leadership level, and then externally with a franchisor, franchisees?
Yeah, I'll tell you, tech is one of the most universal, difficult topics, especially within a franchise system. Just a little bit of backstory. There were various points in time where it was a pain point within Firehouse. Franchisees didn't like the technology. Some of my internal people had issues with the way everything was working with their disciplines. It was hard to find a happy camper. And I went to speak at a large franchise systems franchise conference. Actually, it was their franchise association. I would say it was their Maverick franchise association. And we're talking about a brand with thousands of locations. And, you know, the night before I was going to speak, I had a dinner with about a dozen of the franchisees who served on this board. And when I introduced myself, this was all in advance of my doing the speech. And so I want to familiarize myself, get to know where their issues were. And so we went around the dinner table. I said, just tell me what's the biggest issue for you that you're wrestling with? And like 11 out of the 12 people were talking about their gripes with technology. And I couldn't help to think to myself, oh boy, I feel like I'm just back at a meeting with my franchisees. It's no different. So I think the sentiments are pretty universal.
Did you bring any of the franchisees in the loop in that?
Not on that I would say indirectly. So they weren't part of that. That tech table was very much the working group internally. But we had a tech committee, a technology committee with the franchise association. That was one thing that was very much different about Firehouse. We actually created that body. They're elected by the franchise community, not picked by us. And we facilitated that and enabled it rather than trying to think that was going to be some antagonistic relationship if franchisees were electing their representatives. But they were allowed to form a tech group, and so we always were soliciting their input. And by the way, then involving them in the testing. So when we were doing anything, not only did we do it in the company restaurants, but we'd introduce the tech to the technology committee very early in the process, if not day one. And then when it came time to test it out in franchise restaurants, they were the initial test group, so we could get their direct feedback and incorporate that into the final product.
Makes sense. All right, let's move to our last topic. So in the restaurant technology journey, which comes first? Operation, customer experience, marketing, or employee experience? How would you kind of rate them? One, important to most to least. They're all important. We get it.
Yeah. I'm always going to start with the customer experience. Then the employee experience, how they interact with the technology, how they can use it. After that, I would say the profitability, the numbers, which are closely linked to both of those. But you can do, there's a lot of things you can do in tech to enhance the customer experience, may enhance the customer, employee experience, but still just doesn't make financial sense. And then, you know, the marketing, there's two sides to this. On the marketing side is how you're going to market and promote the technology, right, and communicate this primary to the guest, you know, how it's going to improve the experience or give them a new kind of experience within Firehouse. For example, within Firehouse Subs, we did Rapid Rescue, which is when we were on the early front end of developing an app. We had it for quite some time before the pandemic. We were all set to go, but then we branded it as Rapid Rescue because we were solving for Firehouse. We were solving a problem with online ordering for pickup, because in the Firehouse kitchen process, it's not always the fastest. And I know RBI is doing some great things to bring their talent to the table with Firehouse and being helped to improve upon where it is for many, many years. But it's not the fastest. So one way to help solve that for the guest who has a more urgent need was to get the order ahead set up. But branding it as Rapid Rescue, you know, tying back into the marketing theme, was of immense value. A trigger for us, the tell point, was when we saw in our loyalty data, because that's one of the benefits of having a loyalty program, we see almost in real time what the activity is of those people. And when we saw that their frequency started to turn north, and this was like within a matter of a day or two, that to us was a signal that they were going to be the proverbial canary in the coal mine. Yes, they were our most loyal guests, but if their behavior was changing in an identifiable way, that for us was a leading indicator of what was going to happen with the general consumer. When we saw the change in behavior, that changed what we did strategically. Without that data, could have never made that kind of critical decision making.
Amazing. This has been incredible talk. This is a great segue to our next episode, which we're going to talk about marketing, customer data, and really focus on top line revenue growth. Next time, we're going to talk about the importance of top line revenue growth and how you can drive top line revenue and why that's important. Thank you for tuning in, Don. It was great to have you on again, and look forward to the next episode.
Thanks.